Sada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everybody. This is Shusara Konokumara, and you're listening to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. I'm joined tonight by some of our core council members for the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness, Tim, Megan, and Piela Yen, and we're here in service to you this evening. So let's go ahead and get started. Take a nice deep cleansing breath, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zekiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. Come on back to me. And we'll get started. I think we're going to venture into uncharted territory tonight, I'm thinking. So we're going to open the phone lines. For those of you listening, if you've listened to me before, you will understand this. But if you are new to us, I am not a psychic. I don't do readings. I'm not here to give you your future or anything like that. But if you have a question concerning non-dualism, or the Advaita, I'm trying to think of terms, questions about the ego, dissolution work, then I am the person to talk to. So we'll open the phone lines. If anyone has a question, feel free to call in the BBS number, and we'll just kind of go ahead with the program. And if calls come in, we'll just take them as they come. Okay. So I started our session tonight in Charlotte with our physical satsang that we always have before I do the radio program, from an interesting new place. It was, what did I call it? Tim, remind me. What did I call it? It was like taking the teachings and then walking them. Yeah. Okay. So we can do the same thing here. Part of the challenge, of course, is with me reaching out through the airwaves is, you know, depending on how often you listen, like there are certain things you're going to hear and then you're going to miss others, and certain things you hear repeated all the time. And it's a good opportunity every now and again just to go back and kind of touch on some of the what I call teachings, you know, but things that are really pivotal to understand in your own evolution and in your spiritual path. And we can take those and we can look at, like, once you've got it and once you get the mental understanding of it, like, then what do you do with it, right? So I was asking the group earlier to you give me the teaching and then I'll help everybody understand what you do with it, right? So let's start with your life is your spiritual path. That's a good place to start because it's one of the most, it's one of those foundation teachings to the work. And it seems like such a simple concept, but yet no one ever thinks of this, ever. And every time I bring it to a new student, it's like there's a moment where it just stops them because they've never contemplated the world this way. And that is that your life is your spiritual path, right? So everyone comes into this work thinking they're on their spiritual path. And in reality, you couldn't not be on your spiritual path because your life is your spiritual path, right? And it follows very logically that because spirit is everything, that there's nothing outside of God, nothing outside of spirit. Therefore, by definition, everything is spiritual. So our concept here on earth of, you know, being on a spiritual path versus some other kind of path is kind of a misnomer, right? Now, is it true that we may walk a path that seems to pull us away from our spirituality? Yeah, we could say that. But even that path is serving its purpose. And maybe the purpose is to show you exactly that, where you've veered off of your path. Yeah. So even within that, it's still serving its purpose, right? To bring you back to who you are, back to your knowing. So it's a wonderful thing to lead off with. Your life is your spiritual path. Now, what do you do with it, right? What do you do with it? Well, you actually move through your world now consciously with that understanding in place so that when you are going grocery shopping, you can recognize that in that moment, even that act is spiritual, right? And when you're driving down the street, that act is spiritual. And when you're trying on, what did I say, jeans at the department store, that act is spiritual. Now, you're going to, mind wants to fight that because it says, well, if it's spiritual, it has to be related to me communing with God or me being in prayer or being in meditation. And that's part of the issue here where the mind takes concepts, right? And then it identifies with the concept, and that becomes part of the story that holds you here. So our concept that there are certain things that are spiritual while most things are not spiritual is actually very faulted. It's just not accurate at all. So it could be you're trying on jeans at the department store, and maybe the woman who's working there comes by to your dressing room and says, is there anything I can change out for you or something I can, you know, get for you? And you smile at her and you say, no, thank you. I'm doing fine, but thank you for asking. And in that moment, you have no idea how you may have just touched the life of that person from a very quote unquote spiritual place, right? Seems to be an unspiritual act, but actually, you may have just done something very pivotal for that person in their own walk. And see, the problem here is that we are like a floodlight that has had some kind of an apparatus put around it that has turned us into this pinhole spotlight. You see, that's basically like what has happened to your consciousness. You're this floodlight that sees the big picture, all of it. And yet here, your awareness is down to this little pinhole that you see and experience the world through. And you think, because of the way that the mind functions here, you think that you have understandings. and that you can see what's going on and what's happening. And in reality, you can see almost nothing of what's going on other than this very tiny, tiny limited perspective. And this is partly what traps consciousness here in it. You know, once that's identified with, you can say, oh, you know, me making a passing comment to a stranger doesn't have any impact, but you can't see the big picture. You know, you can't see it. So you are certainly not in a position to judge it as anything. So take that teaching with you after today and remind yourself of it constantly. It's my life that's my spiritual path. This life. Yeah. And all the others before it. But what matters right now is this one. Because this is the one you're walking. And this is the one that you set it up to play out a certain way. And set it up to be with certain people. Right? There are no accidents. Everything is very purposeful. And it's your construction. So, of course, everything that you put into place was put there very specifically. Right? And the purpose being to bring up whatever needs to come up to lead you back to the awareness of who you are. Right? Not so that you would learn it, but that so you would remember it. There's nothing new to learn here. You just have to remember. That's why moments of awakening are kind of quiet. Because everyone has a sense that when it comes, it's, you know, like when you're struggling in math with some kind of formula and then you finally get it and you have this moment of, oh, oh my God, I get it, you know. Well, that's because you just learned something new. But awakening is the exact opposite. Right? The stuff that was quote unquote learned falls away. And what you're left with is just what you've always been. It's not new. It's not any less beautiful, that's for sure. But it's not new. And the experience isn't that it's new. But there's a wonderment to it that is priceless. Just priceless. Okay. What's another teaching? Give me another one. They feel put on the spot. PLAN, give us one.
We're not here to change anything.
Oh, that's a good one. So, we're not here to change anything. We're here to see through it. You have to add the additional part because the we aren't here to change anything part. If you only said that, wow, you would really mess people up. But the world's so screwed up. Is it? Well, sure. It's because it's the shadow of, you know, reality. And yeah, it's pretty screwed up. But the point is that one who awakens recognizes that nothing needs to change. One who's unawakened and on the gerbil wheel of the computer program that we call ego, you know, or lower mind, struggles constantly with polarized opposites. So whatever is positive in the world should stay the way it is and doesn't need to change. And whatever is negative in the world needs to change, right? Because the mind is constantly striving to make everything good. Eliminate the negative. Accentuate the positive. Wasn't that some kind of song? Something about accentuate the positive is a song out there. But that's what the mind is trying to do. And it's impossible because this reality is polarized. And remember, this reality is held in balance. Why is it that the Buddha's message of the middle path was so perfect? It's because it's held in perfect balance. When everything's in perfect balance, nothing needs to change. Right? But the mind experiences its reality as out of balance, and therefore it wants everything to change. And it works so hard. It's very tireless. You know, we should all applaud the stamina of the lower mind to continue trudging away at making all the changes that it feels like it needs to make, because it really is tireless. And you all know the feeling of feeling utterly exhausted by the voice in the head that just never stops and never stops. It is an exhausting space to live in. But the greater teaching is that we aren't here to change anything. We're here to see through it. Why? Well, it's very simple. If you believe something needs to change, then you believe it to be true and you believe it to be real. If this level of reality is not even real from the truest of meanings, then to say it needs to change is to give it a credence that is not warranted. You see? So everything here is struggling for balance. Well, what happens when the one who struggles just stops struggling? It seems to find its own balance at that point. Because it doesn't matter what's happening in the world. When the one who struggles surrenders and gives itself over to whatever it is, well, the need for change disappears with it, doesn't it? And this is where non-attachment is so important, right? Because you could take someone who says, well, oh, that's fine. I'll just, you know, I'll stop struggling to pay my rent and give myself over to the fact that I can't make enough money and I won't go and try to get another job. I'll just know that I'm going to lose my apartment, right? So I surrender to that. And then what? Well, I guess then you watch your life circumstance fall apart. And if you want to just hang in that space, well, that's an okay place to hang. But is there anything wrong with saying, I need to make more money, therefore I better go out and find a second job? No. As long as there isn't an attachment to it. And the attachment comes from, oh my God, if I don't find another job, I'm going to lose my apartment. I better, oh my gosh. And then the stress and the panic and the all the other stuff that happens, right? Without allowing for whatever the universe wants to bring to present itself. Right? So you show up. I think we talked about that last week. It's kind of like you show up. You got to show up. You show up, but you can't be attached to the outcome, because if as soon as you get attached, then you have just stuck a huge roadblock up to the universe. If you show up, the universe wants to come and support you, but as soon as you give it terms, well, then you just cut it off. You know, you cut yourself off from the magic that could happen and it wants to happen. And this is it's a very fine line, because a lot of people can take that and they turn themselves into the one who carries the belief that I just have to have faith. And while it's true that you're being asked to walk in faith, that can be used as a crutch, and it can be used as something that will keep you from acting. Yeah. And so those who hold that are generally the ones who really hold it because of their fear of acting, of actually doing something. So they turn and use the whole faith thing as their crutch. And then there's no growth there. So remember, wherever you're polarized, it's the opposite. Wherever you're polarized and you're holding, you can recognize the one conscious place that you're holding. If you're holding it consciously and you can recognize that it is polarized, Your lesson is in the unconscious side. That's the piece you've got to pull out. So you go in and you see where I'm holding one side. And maybe it is the belief that everything's perfect just the way it is and nothing needs to change. That's true, but it can also be a trap, depending on the level of consciousness that's experiencing it. You see, one side of it is a belief, and that belief is held within the identified self. And the other side of it is not a belief, it's a knowing. You see, and the one who carries it as a knowing has no problem acting. Whereas the one who carries it as a belief will run from acting. You see? It's very fine how all of it plays itself out. I hope you can follow that. So if you, in doing dissolution work, and you're a seeker, and you're like, I want to understand why, you know, this personality does what it does, why it's, how it's stuck. Obviously, it's stuck. Start looking at these things. And if that's where you've been sitting, the place that says, I don't need to do anything because everything's perfect, now you need to look at the other side of it. If you're holding that everything's perfect, on the other side of it, you believe that everything is imperfect. You believe the exact opposite. Remember, you have to hold both sides. It's just one side you will know in your own, like, personality. This is true for me. That's going to be your experience. And so you won't be able to witness that the opposite is equally true for you. Equally true. People really struggle with that one. Well, that's not equal. I'm holding one side consciously. Well, they're equal. Remember, everything's held in balance. They're equal. So equally, unconsciously, you're holding the other side. And it's scary. That side is the scary side. So if you are holding the belief that everything's perfect and nothing needs to change, and therefore there's nothing you need to do, somewhere in there is a very scared you who's afraid to do anything because everything is imperfect and there are a myriad reasons why you're afraid to take action. I'm afraid I'll fail. I'm afraid it won't have an impact. I'm afraid of the unknown. Like, name it. It could be anything, multiple things, right? And that's the work. The work is to get in there to that unconscious side. That's the work, because it has to be brought to light. It's been sitting in the dark, right? And the whole point is to balance it out. So bring light to both. One's easy to see because you already believe it consciously. The other one is hidden from you. The work is to get in to find the hidden side of all of your beliefs. And those hidden sides, you know, they come out of needs of yours that have been unmet. We have a call. Is there a line that I'm supposed to announce? This is very new for me. PLEN, do you want to let Doug know?
Yes, we'll just let him know that we'll go ahead and take the call.
Put your mic down, honey. I can't hear you.
Oh, I keep forgetting to do that. we just have to let him know that we'll go ahead and take the call, that we're ready for it now.
Hi, am I on?
Hi, you are on.
Hi, Shasara. It's Pete from Connecticut. How are you?
Well, Pete, it is wonderful to hear your voice. I'm doing just fabulous. How are you?
I'm well, and I'm trying to follow the conversation on the phone and on the radio. So, so talk about scared and having a pinhole view. My question has to do with disqualifying energy, and you may have talked about this a little bit, touched on it, but I thought I heard you say this once or twice along the way, that behaviors that sort of manifest themselves and sort of keep us sort of in the lower self, and I thought I heard you use the phrase disqualifying from time to time. Is that my... Am I making that up, or is that something that...
Oh, no, the energies themselves are disqualified, meaning they're polarized.
Disqualified. Yeah, yes. Could you clarify that a little bit for me? I'm not sure. I understand what, you know, where that threshold is, where the energy gets disqualified because of the, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great question.
I'm sure it happens for me. I'm just not always sure when it happens is what I'm saying.
Yes. Okay. So for the average individual on the planet who is identified with the personal self, it happens the moment that the pure energetic hits the chakra that it's related to. That's when it happens. So I think, and I know we had a program before when I talked about the rays of light and their association with the chakras and how that functions. And so perfectly qualified, we'll say, the pure light that comes into any given chakra based on what the light purpose is, comes in its rarefied, you know, divine form. And then as soon as it hits the chakras that are functioning from identification, what ends up coming out of the chakra into the world is disqualified energy. Versus a person who's functioning with all of their chakras in alignment and they're all functioning properly, then that energy that is qualified energy comes in and then it goes out into the world in its perfect, pure form, which is what we're all here to do, is to actually move each one of those rays of light in the way that they're meant to move in the world. But they get stopped up at the chakra points.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much for explaining that. I'll let other people call, but I really love your show, and I think you know that, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Pete. It was wonderful to hear your voice finally.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Good night. That's a good question. And so people, like, I think it's funny because we were talking just before this program at the other session about how I was telling people, you know, self-recrimination is just something that's got to stop. You have to stop judging yourself as a failure and like all of these things when you recognize that maybe you recognize that failure has happened, but you have to stop identifying as the failure, you see, because there's a difference there. And this is a good example. People would say, well, what am I doing to disqualify the energy, right? Throwing the blame on ourselves that I'm doing something wrong. And it's like, no, it's far more innocent than that. It's just the fact that the identification is in place that results in disqualified energy. That's all it is. I mean, that's truly all it is. So if you can get yourself in your heart, right, and you are moving from your heart, then the energies will come and they'll move through you exactly as they should, right? So we'll take the base chakra as an example. The base chakra, when it's functioning in accordance with the light, it's white. It's pure white. And it's there to show purity, yeah, purity. But from a disqualified place, the base chakra kicks out a lot of really ugly stuff, right? And everyone sees it as red. When you see an aura, you know, you see it as red. And that's the disqualified color. Now, it's not that the person is like purposefully doing something wrong to mess it up. It's just that the identification is running. So let's say in that moment, that person's experiencing fear over something. So this energy, of course, the energy is hitting all the chakras all the time, right? Just the rays of light are coming out from the sun. The sun being Helios and Vesta, it is consciousness, right? And they're moving out into the universe and they're moving through you every second, moving through your chakras. They hit the chakra and then move out from there, right? So you're like this walking, you're meant to be like a walking star, not any different. If you could see yourself as light, that's what you would see. You're a star, right? And so they come in and they're meant to move out a very particular color. And within that, and the essence of it that underlies it is very specific, right? And each chakra is very specific. And so it gets disqualified because you're identified. And so then it changes the energetic of that quality of the ray of light. But it's very innocent. And we have to remember that above and beyond all, you know, everyone here on this planet is so innocent. The fall of consciousness was a completely innocent thing. There was no bad thing that happened from the outside. You know, it was just a misunderstanding, you know. It was just a concept that got looked at and played with. That's all. You know, just this, and it's so simple, people. It is so simple. We make it so hard. And the simplicity is that in a moment, the consciousness that you experience as you identified itself with being something separate from everything else. That's it. And it plays itself out every time someone gives birth. What do you think happens to that baby, right? And I use that example because no one ever gave me that example. That came completely out of my experience and out of my own work. I saw it so clearly. That's the imprint. It's right there at birth, right? This baby is conceived in this space, right? And within the space, it grows and it evolves, but it's always part and parcel of its environment. Kind of like a fish being born in the water, does it understand what water is? No, because it's part of its environment. And the baby is the same thing. So the baby will get subjected to polarized energies when it's in the womb. Whatever mom's experiencing, baby experiences, right? There's been a lot of work done around all that. So it feels polarized energies, but it's still part of its environment. So there's no identification with the energies, see? Because there's nothing outside of it yet. But as soon as that baby is born and it comes out of that birth canal, it experiences separation. And now it's been, you know, expelled from its environment into a new environment. And right there, the whole sense of otherness is put in place, isn't it? Right there. Because if there's a here, there has to be a there. And if there's a this is different, that means there has to be, well, there was something else in order for this to be different. You see? It's already polarized. Even if the baby has a very calm, beautiful birth. You know, I had, I home birthed my kids and had children in water, right? So when you have babies birthed in water, they come out very calm because that shift from inside the body to now outside of the body is very gradual for them. They don't experience it as a shocking thing. So they come out very calm, you know, very aware, no screaming or any of that stuff, no bright lights and everybody, you know, running around, like doing whatever they do in hospitals, okay? But the child still experiences polarization. It just comes into it in a calmer way, right? Without seeing it as a negative thing. It's just different. And those babies tend to function differently from the time they're born too, because of the atmosphere that they were brought in through. I mean, you talk about a shocker. You got a little baby that gets born in a hospital under really bright lights, and then they pick him up and smack him on the butt, make the kid cry and whisk him off to, you know, I mean, imagine all of the stimulus that this infant gets in such a short period of time. Shots they're given, you know, pain, so they have to experience pain and all of this stuff so fast. And is it any wonder that everyone's walking around on the planet feeling like they're alone, you know, in their experience, because that's the experience of the infant. But the infant is an extension of mom, isn't it? To a degree, an extension of dad, because, you know, those chromosomes played a part, but really an extension of mom. born of her body. So that physical being that you see as the child is your own flesh. Yeah? Where's the separation in that? So to a degree, if you look at it, your flesh is the flesh of your ancestors. Right? Where's the separation there? So it's just it's a conceptual thing. Right? It's a conceptual thing. And somehow on this planet, it's just really locked in that you are separate. And within the concept of separation, there are all these beliefs that sit there. You know, the first one said that separation is bad because that was the experience, that it was a negative thing. Like where I was, it's the grass is always greener kind of story, right? So where I was preferable to where I am now. So separation's bad. And now we're going to work like heck to try to reunite and keep fighting the forces that keep us separate. And what you resist persists. Oh, there's another good teaching. Right? What you resist persists. It's a good one. How do you walk that in the world? Recognize what you're in resistance to begin with. And question it. Use the questioner. Questioner was, came right away at the fall of consciousness, but it can be used. And we talked about that earlier too, We look at the questioner as the bad thing. Yes, the questioner ultimately gets dropped, right? Because there are no questions in the state of pure awareness. There is no question, right? Because there's nothing to be questioned. You are, again, in the state of pure awareness, you are the environment that the awareness is of, just like the baby inside the mother's womb, right? It is its environment. And the essence of you is that. You are pure awareness. Awareness of the environment. And the questioner only exists because there are concepts in place that are being held in place and being, identified with, believed in. So that gives rise to the questioner. The first moment of perceived separation, the question comes, what just happened? Or what is happening? Or what do I do? Right? And you can see how that would happen so quickly. I mean, what is happening? You can see where that comes from. And as soon as the question is there, see that there's something underneath the question. If you really look at it, in order for the question to even exist, a belief has to sit underneath it. So if the question is, what is happening? There's a belief there, yeah? That something's happening, right? Or there wouldn't be a question about what is happening. And that belief is tainted by the sense of that, like, there's kind of a good happening and there's a bad happening and there's everything in between, right? And it says, well, what is happening? Confusion, the confusion. If there's confusion, there's identification. This is why I love this work, because you can be a really intellectually grounded person. And I love this work for people like that, because that was me. I was always a very rational, logical person, And a lot of teaching out there is very lofty and stuff. And you'd be like, no, I want it to show me how it works in the world, How does it bear fruit? There was one teacher out there, she used to say, how does it grow corn? And I used to love that. So I'm like, yes, that's what I want to know. How does it grow corn? And that's why I love Vivekananda, because Vivekananda is all about the practical side of Advaita. Yeah. The very logical, rational show it to me in the world side. Because it all exists here. You just have to know how to look at it, right? And you have to explore. And it's just we're not taught to explore the inner workings of the mind. But once you get in and you really start to dig, it becomes so clear, you know. And as you do the digging and it becomes clearer and clearer, then that moves you more and more into a space where you can really start to experience things outside of what you thought to be real, you know, to experience your own reality as not real or as a faulty perception. Even that, I mean, that's huge. You don't forget those moments. You don't forget them. You know, you have an experience where you can witness where your own perception tainted how you experienced the moment. And you pull back. And then the question is, you know, wow, like, why did I believe that? Or what made me project that? Or is it true even? Right? And then you really go in from an objective place to look at it. Is it true? Could I have known that that was true when I made that projection? Why was that projection made in the first place? Oh, I see now. It's because the last time I was in the same exact situation, that's what happened. And so I automatically projected that it was going to happen again. See, so my choice, quote unquote, Megan, was to take this route. Was it a choice? No, it was a reaction. Yeah, it was a reaction based on projection. That's it. And when you pull back from an objective place and you ask yourself, if I hadn't ever had the experience before and this happened this time, would I have acted the same way? And you can look at it and see it from a very different vantage point. You're like, oh my gosh. So what was it based on? And what room did I give? What allowance did I give in that reaction to then allow for a different outcome? You see? These are pivotal moments. This is work all of you can be doing. You know, you don't have to have a one-on-one guide working with you for hours on end every week. You can do this work now. That's the beauty of it, you know. I can show you that. Start looking at that piece. It's enormous. Look at the next time something happens and you automatically go through your mental database looking for it happened before. Trust is a big one with that. I'm not going to trust the person because the last time, you know, last time I trusted them, they got one over on me or whatever. They weren't worthy of it. And then it comes up again. It may even be a different person, but a similar situation. And now you're going to judge the other person based on something that they have nothing to do with, right? And is that fair to them? No. And why do you do it? Well, to protect yourself. Why? Because of your experience. And your experience was you experienced pain as a result of whatever it was that played out. And now you're going to hold that and you're going to use that as your reason to withhold yourself from others. You see, there's just no room in the heart for that. The heart doesn't withhold itself from other people. The heart doesn't use a past misunderstanding or a past event to decide that it's going to treat you differently today. Now don't misunderstand me, okay? This does not turn you into a doormat. A lot of people would want to believe that. The point is, you take experience, right? You walk it. It gives you the opportunity to turn it into wisdom. And now you have the wisdom. So you can see a pattern of behavior with a person, right? And recognize that when given the opportunity, this is what they do. And there's nothing wrong with the next time it comes your way, passing it by, saying no thanks, not this time. But within it, you don't have to withhold your love from the person, you see? And that's the only difference. In the first scenario, you're sitting in a place of judgment. You're viewing their behavior as bad. You're viewing yourself from a self-righteous place where you're better than, right? They're less than because of their patterning or their behavior or their choices, whatever you want to call it. From an enlightened place, no one's better than or less than, period. That person did what they did because that's all they know to do, because they're a product of their patterning. And maybe you're in a position where you can start to see beyond your own patterning. And if you are in a position where you can start seeing beyond your own patterning, then the expectation of you is that you will function from that level of understanding now in the world. What does that mean? It means you stop sitting in judgment. That person does the same thing over and over again. It doesn't make them less than. They are the way they are because that's all they know. Are they wrong for that? Were you wrong for that when that was all you knew? Or was it innocent? I used to use this example. I used to say, like, if you had a person who came to you from, I don't know, Brazil, and they started speaking to you in Portuguese, you know, would you ream them out because they're speaking Portuguese? Would you be disgusted with them because they don't know English? Or would you have an understanding that, well, of course they speak Portuguese because that's all they ever learned? Is it their fault? You know, are they bad because they grew up in a Portuguese-speaking country? No, I mean, I guess some people would. But from a general place, no, you don't blame a person for that. That's all they know. That's what they were taught. Okay, your personality is the same exact thing. And so is everybody else's. It's what they were taught. It's innocent. They're just doing what they do because they don't know any better, right? And the challenge is that when you start to wake up little by little by little and start to recognize these things, now it's your job, and it is your job, to stop falling back into that behavior, that patterned behavior, and to see it when it's occurring and make a different choice. See, now you can live consciously in the world. Consciously. The program is not conscious. So if you're an individual walking around the planet, completely functioning by the patterning, you're not even conscious. You're a zombie. Literally. But it starts waking itself up, you know, because the God is within. And it wakes itself up at the right time. And you start to listen to stuff like this, or you read books, or you do whatever you do, and you start gaining levels of awareness. Now it's your job to start to live by them. You don't hang on to it because it's some kind of, you know, like someone who goes to college and then they're all proud of their degree up on the wall. Look at me, look what I did. No. It's practical application. That's what it's all about here. Who cares about what you accomplished? Who cares? How are you applying it in the world? You know, that's the only thing that matters. And that's the difference. Most teachers out there are really more about the learning part. No. It's the application. That's how the world's going to change, people. It's application. You're not going to walk off the life-death cycle by not applying the things that you're being shown. My God, everybody would have done that by now. If that's all it was, yeah. It was just about learning something new. Shoot, that's all they teach the kids to do in school now. They don't teach them to think. Just learn what we just gave you and now spit it back out. They'd all be ascended masters, right? How are you going to apply it? Right. That's what makes the difference. That's what turns you into the master that you are. I love that Ramtha always called people master, master. Because it's true. You already are that. You just have amnesia. Right? So am I supposed to be mad at you because you have amnesia? Walk around in judgment of you because you can't remember who you are? How self-righteous is that? Love them. Love them for the divinity that they are, which is the same divinity that you are. It doesn't matter that I know myself to be God and some Joe Schmo down the street doesn't have a clue, considers himself a worthless sinner. Who cares? He's God to me. You have to judge him any differently. You know, if you're going to judge him for the bad behavior, then all you're doing is believing the story. You're believing the story. You're not here to withhold your heart. You're here to let it just expand in every direction from you because that's what it does. You know, God is expansion constantly. There's no end point. Constant expansion, kind of like, you know, space just goes on and on and on and on. Well, so do you, right? That's what you're here to do. Show up in the world and expand that heart. Don't hold it back and shrivel all up, compress it to the point where there's nothing coming out of you anymore because all you have is judgment, self-righteousness, you know. Love everyone, regardless of their behavior. Take action when necessary to protect yourself from the hurtful behaviors of others, right? Take action when necessary to point out to others how their behavior is hurtful. Sometimes you can be that teacher that can show someone something that has been hiding from them, and that's great. Sometimes you let it pass you by because it's not going to make an impact, and that's fine too. It doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, all you got to do is love them. Because in one essence, they are you, literally. They're your projection. And what you're seeing is just the projection of a fallen consciousness in all of its forms. And you get to witness it in them. And it's innocent. Remember that. It's important. Okay. Enjoy the song tonight for meditation. Go in nice and deep. And we will see you next week. Love you so much. Good night.